This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. According to the World Economic Forum, it will take 12 to 15 decades to achieve global gender equality if we continue on the current path in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. How can we speed up the process of gender equality in corporate Malaysia and encourage women's participation at all levels of business? Joining me to discuss this today is Michelle Kaithi Lim, President and CEO of the Institute of Corporate Directors Malaysia, or ICDM, and Anne Abraham, Chairperson and Founder of Lead Women. Michelle, Anne, welcome to the show. So, Anne, I'd like to start with you, because you've been working on advancing women's participation in the corporate world for the past 10 years at least, through Lead Women and also the Malaysian chapter of the 30% Club, which you co-founded in 2015. So I'd like to ask for your assessment of the progress that has been made over the past decade in advancing women's participation in the corporate world.
Thank you for that, Shazana. And yes, you know, it's been 10 years plus in that space. So if you just look at numbers, we have progressed. And if you compare us to the region, especially looking at women on boards and the numbers that we've done, I think we've done pretty well in that sense. You know, if you look across Asia Pacific, apart from Australia, we probably lead the pack in terms of our progress and number. So on the top 100, we have almost 26.5-27%. And if you look at women in leadership or managerial positions, we are roughly about 26% also at leadership positions. But if you ask me, is that good progress? I think 10 years, it's taken a long time. When we started, you know, if you look at across the 900 plus companies, we were like 7% women on boards. And today, if you look at the 928 companies, we're probably about 17%. So it is good progress. But I think going forward, with so much being done and so many issues being discussed, and we kind of understand where the root causes are, I would like to see this accelerate in the next 3 to 5 years, you know, and get to that 30% that we've been talking about. And should we be happy at 30%? Maybe still not. You know, why should it have to be a number, right, that we are measured on? So, I leave it at that. And I'm sure Michelle has got some contribution on this too.
Absolutely. Michelle, I mean, ICDM conducted a study last year looking at Malaysian board diversity, as well as you actually set up an index of around 300 publicly listed companies on Bursa Malaysia and how they rank. So do the findings of the study on gender match the progress and areas that need to be looked at that Anne shared?
The progress is there, as Anne has said, it's definitely there. In fact, I think even for senior women leadership positions, we're probably bit more than 26%. I think it could even be closer to 40% from, I think this is the Grant Thornton Women in Business report. But again, back to our study, Shazana, yes, we did do the Malaysia Board and Diversity Study and Index. The study is more to show the correlation between certain factors, diversity on a board, as well as company performance. And what we found is that at least a one-third, you know, a woman representation correlates with a 38% higher median return on equity compared to boards with no women representation. So again, there's empirical evidence out there. There's a lot of evidence, you know, besides our study and index as well, which showcases the importance of gender diversity and women representation on boards and the correlation with better corporate performance in that sense. But Shazana, I'd like to just go back to what you said earlier about gender equality. I think perhaps there needs to be a move towards not so much equality, but equity, recognizing that there are differences and recognizing what women can bring. And, you know, talking about the corporate world, what women can bring in terms of the differences in mindset and approaches to a corporate table. So I think that needs to be recognized more so that we respect each gender and welcome that sort of inclusivity onto boards.
What do you think, Anne, using the nomenclature of equality and equity, do you think that using the term gender equity might yield better results or faster results in terms of getting more representation of women?
From my understanding, equity is really ensuring that the level playing field is fair. If it means that, you know, at the end of the day, certain policies need to be in place so that it supports the minority group, then that helps to bring equity. But at the end of the day, I feel there should be equality. We don't need any of these props. It should be purely on the complete equality. So, you know, we talk about diversity, equity and inclusion. And the reason we do equity is how do we make everybody have an equal position? So in some cases, we have to have policy. In some cases, we have to have different ways to bring that equity, right? If somebody is disabled, for example, how do we bring equity? So for me, that's important. And yes, you know, once we level out that playing field at the end of the day, then how do we completely remove everything so that everybody has the same view and is completely included? So it starts with that.
Michelle, I want to ask, what convinces companies to open up their boards? What kind of arguments or what's the thought process that leads them to go like, yeah, we need more women? What sets them there?
From experience, Shazana, two things really stand out. The value proposition, what the women can bring to a board. And I think there's a lot of evidence for that. And companies are seeing that. For example, women are naturally more empathetic, you know, which means they deal well with people. So, for example, in for your social capital, in terms of the S and the ESG, they deal very well with the workforce. They deal very well with stakeholders, for example. Therefore, bring a lot in terms of sustainability, ESG and all that, which is a hot and rising area now. So, again, there's a lot of value add from women on boards. On the second point that I mentioned, which stands out, is that, you know, companies are now starting to realize that there's a lot of female talent out there and is ready to sit on boards. Some of them could be what we call aspiring directors. They've yet to sit, for example, on a listed board, but they are very, very capable. And this is where we have a targeted program where we raise the competency of aspiring directors across the board, both male and female. And we bring these candidates to clients. And we see more and more now that clients are willing to consider candidates from this pool. And I can confirm we've actually placed a woman recently on a listed board who had no LISCO experience, right? So things are moving. The needle is moving. But obviously, there's still a gap that, you know, to catch up. I mean, 30% is still a minimum target. So there's still, you know, more to catch up. If you think about it, it should be 50%, really.
And do you have anything to add on that point in terms of what you think convinces companies to open up their boards?
I mean, I like to be a little bit blunt here in the sense that I think the pressure, the external pressure, you know, and the need to comply is also pushing, you know, and the fact that today we have also said must be one woman on board. So there's the whole rush to say, okay, let's look at this, you know, and it's a good start. And we have so many competent, ready-to-go women on the boards. So we know that when they take these women, they will see a refreshed discussion on the board, a refreshed culture and atmosphere on the board, if they give the woman an equal chance, you know, and not just do it because I think I just need to get this one woman, it'll be a token woman and that's it. So I think it's a help. The external pressures have helped. The whole push around ESG is high conversation at board levels. So people are feeling now the other way. You know, if I don't have a woman on board, hey, I better look at this. Right. Something's not right, right? Mm. So, and I think that's great and that's good. And though some may say, hey, this is going to really push tokenism. And of course, the voice of some women is like, who cares? So let it be tokenism. But when we are there, we'll be able to really show that diverse perspectives bring value. Mm. And so I'm quite encouraged that it's going to shift and it's going to be exactly what Michelle is saying, that they're going to see that value and they're going to say, hey, let's open up. When we look for women, let's open up and let's not be constrained by who we know around this board, which was what was happening decades ago, right?
Right. I'm curious about your thoughts on institutionalizing these quotas then. We don't really have laws apart from the budget 2022 policy, which sets that all companies should have at least one woman board member by 2023. I think there's this informal target of a 30% women's representation, you know, in economic sectors, in government leadership positions. And would it be correct to assume that you support legislating for these quotas?
For the longest time, we didn't. When we first started, it was like, okay, let's do it. You know, let's do a soft approach. Let's encourage businesses to really look at this value. Let's get the women ready. It was always about the women being the issue, right? The women are not ready, so let's train them. The women need to be given some opportunities. So, you know, let's go talk to these companies. Let's do roundtables. And we did all that. And the numbers started to increase slowly but steadily. But, you know, it's been 10 years. The aspirational target was set in late 2011. You know, the wider 900 companies, it's only 17%. We've only moved 10%, right? And for the top 100, because there's a lot of focus and they are the movers and shakers in the capital market, so obviously they want to be seen complying, doing the right thing, and many of them are on the right track. So I think this whole move with the government, I'm really encouraged, but one woman really won't make a difference in the needle. Depending on the culture of the board, etc., you might not even bring the best of her to the table, you know. And I think there shouldn't be a one person. If you're really going to do it, let's do it with 30% and mandate it for a short period of time and say, by this time, let's get 30%. Then we remove all these things. And then if you're seeing value, you'll obviously stay with it and grow. If you're not seeing value, then you churn, you know. But the most important is you haven't even tried. And diversity is discomfort. When you bring something different to the table, it is not going to be comfortable. It's going to take time to get acceptance and inclusion. But boards need to be understanding that, you know, differences need to be embraced. And if you do it right, you then see the value of diversity. Many of them don't go the long haul and then they say, oh, it's not working. You know, there's too much of these differences and they stop, you know. So I think for me, yeah, I think if it's not going to work at 2023 or even now, just mandate it for a short while and let every board bring that diversity.
What about you, Michelle? What are your thoughts on the quota? Do you think that this could provide that positive pressure needed for more companies to consider bringing on women?
I do agree. I think that, you know, a quota would help push the needle more. But again, it isn't setting a quota for quota's sake. And that's not sustainable, right? And merit is a given, right? Just to clarify that merit is a given when you consider any candidate onto a board. But the quota will help shift the needle. You know, and there's a reason for that 30%, right? Because you need that critical mass. As Anne said, you know, it's no point having just the one woman on board, right? You're probably not going to see that difference in terms of contribution, right? When you start to move towards 30%, you start to see the difference on the board. So I think it's important that, you know, we all appreciate why, you know, 30% is out there, why we talk about a quota. Why, you know, even now, you know, government needs to push that needle, you know, between this year and next year, etc. There is value to that.
On The Breakfast Grill today, we're discussing the state of women's representation and leadership in Malaysian businesses with our panel. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and with me on the show today is Michelle Kaithi Lim, President and CEO of the Institute of Corporate Directors Malaysia, and Anne Abraham, Chairperson and Founder of Lead Women. We're discussing gender equality and equity in corporate Malaysia. I want to ask both of you about the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, it's well acknowledged that the pandemic has exacerbated gender inequalities. We do see women being disproportionately impacted, both socially and economically. Do you think that we'll see the repercussions of this in the female corporate leadership pipeline? Do you think that the pandemic has set back efforts to grow that base of women corporate leaders? Maybe we can start with Michelle and then Anne.
I think, yes, COVID-19 has, to a certain extent, increased, obviously, the time that women are spending on family responsibilities, for one. And therefore, it's not surprising that you would find that perhaps many women have dropped out of the workforce and you know, there's a higher rate of that. I know there's studies out there. McKinsey did this power of parity research, found that, you know, the share of women in what we call unpaid care work, right, at home, has a high and negative correlation with the female labor force participation rates. And this shows definitely that COVID has been the cause of that. Leadership roles in that sense, you know, that needs to build up again over time, right? Women need, you know, businesses, if they understand this and coming out of the pandemic, I think that has helped, and there's a silver lining in that, because a lot of companies now recognize you need to support, right? Whether it's work from home, whether you need to be more inclusive, all these you know items are coming up now. So people recognize you need to be empathetic towards all these issues, right? And that will then encourage more, you know, women to be coming out onto the labor force.
What about you, Anne? From your vantage point, do you think the pandemic has set back efforts to grow that base of women corporate leaders?
I definitely see it has set back. But I think the other thing to also be cognizant and concerned about is the fact that with COVID, we have also been able to see how technology has become a lot more frontline in the way work is conducted, right? And it is becoming a very important part of a leader's role. The whole digital leadership is becoming a big thing. And if you look at STEM and you look at the areas of STEM, you don't find many women. The number percentage is a lot lesser for women. So this whole shift and change that COVID has brought into the workforce space, I think needs to be re-looked at very seriously, because a lot of the work that women do are work areas that can be easily automated. And the entire digitization comes in, and you will find, you know, operational roles, roles that are very much administrative, and those roles are going to go away. And unless we can bring in that kind of mindset and ensure and encourage women to move more into, they're not going to move up that rung as fast. So I think COVID has in a way opened up the eyes of many, and also the fact that many women are not in that space as in education right from the very beginning, then the impact is all the way across to the top. They will see glass walls, they will see glass ceilings as they get there.
I think that's a very interesting point that you put there, the fact that the presence of women in technology sector, it is lacking. I mean, you mentioned mindsets, and we've also spoken about structural issues in terms of setting the right environment for women to stay in the workforce longer. What do you think is the bigger barrier? Is the problem more of a structural economic obstacle or a social culture one in terms of what's preventing women from rising up in the corporate ranks?
I think it's both, Shazana. I think it's both, and they play an equal weighting in terms of being barriers, right? So if you look at, of course, the social cultural, it is quite a norm that women are seen in certain stereotypical roles, women's expectations, that they will be the ones dealing with unpaid care. So a lot of things really bring to front that the woman will always be secondary in the job front. And that has also given rise to pay inequity, right? A lot of the time, if you look at health sector, high percentage of women, if you compare salaries across sectors, probably the lowest paid sector. You know, and the same with education. So already from get-go, you know, women are already in a way disadvantaged because of the way the level of education or choice of education. Then comes the motherhood penalty. Then comes the segregation of work, the glass walls. You can do this, but not this. You know, stereotypically, women cannot be available 24/7. So some very high-powered projects, maybe not them this time, somebody else. So it's already drawing those. And then the overall mindsets, the discrimination, the unconscious biases, etc. So if you look at a woman's career, right from recruit to retention to progression, there are so many things. And we've got all these terms, sticky floor, we've got glass walls, we've got glass ceilings, we've got glass cliffs now. You know, the fact that when something is just not working, put a woman there. And then when she fails, you say, oh, you know, she was a woman. So, you know, there's so many things like that that's going through. And so the woman's career experience is so different from male career experience. I think when we started to look at this and analyze it, we see that we're at a disadvantage at every stage. So we need to really look at policies, you know, etc., to remove these biases. So that has to be done so that it can bring equity. And then, of course, there's the woman herself, right, based on social and cultural norms and environments, she herself sees herself as maybe not good enough, not ready, maybe I need to take that back seat for a while, and it goes on. So hence the work we do tries to address both these areas. So we look at what's unequal in the workplace, where the equities need to come, and that's our work in encouraging workplaces to drive towards that through policy, through process, through bringing mindset shift and change, culture shifts and change. And then we work on the woman leader as well. And we say, hey, look at yourself. You have so much and you can do so much. So what holds you back? And then we look to break those internal biases.
Michelle, is there anything that you'd like to add, I guess, from your work with trying to train more women to be board ready?
Yeah, I completely agree with Anne. It's a combination of both, right, from the economic side as well as the cultural side. And I think stereotyping, whether you're stereotyping at work, you're stereotyping amongst genders, that again puts, you know, the woman in a certain role, right? Less so than a man, because a man is expected to be, you know, at work, and the woman, you know, at home and work and everything else. And therefore, she doesn't automatically get number one placing at work, for example. So again, this is where, you know, to remove, you know, what we call barriers as such. I think, again, it's a culture within society and a culture within organizations that include women, right? So there is that equity in that sense. Include them as much as you're including the men. And again, starting from the board sets a very, very strong tone. You know, we talk about the tone at the top. It is true, right? Diversity and inclusivity from the top is a powerful, powerful force of change. It's both, you know, on the supply and demand side. So the women as well, you know, if they step up now, there's a lot of opportunity for them, you know, with, for example, Anne and myself, we can help build up their competencies to start with the board and then trickle down to the rest of the organization. I mean, even in terms of ASEAN, at ICDM, we've started already the ASEAN platform, as we talk about, with the other Institute of Directors in the region. And this, again, will help further widen, you know, network of board candidates, female candidates as well, growing, you know, to supply, you know, cross-functionally within ASEAN, but more importantly as well, to offer our ASEAN board candidates to the rest of the world and showcase what we have, right? Asia, Malaysia, we're very strong in terms of, you know, women as well. So we can showcase that.
Mm. So in terms of policy measures then, what, in your view, would be the most impactful policy measure in increasing women's participation in leadership moving forward? What kind of policy measures would you want to see companies mandate?
I look more at the government. So some of the areas that we can look at, right? So some of the economic gender-related barriers that lead to poorer economic outcomes for women generally across, right? Pay gap. So is there anything that legislates that? Are we putting anything in place for equity? Then we look at leadership, and we talked about that. Should we book quotas and really enforce that? Because we don't see the numbers, and maybe a time-bound quota of some form. Huh? Mm. And then we look at unpaid care. Really the root cause of women being held back. Women don't go into the workforce, they drop out at a point when their career is accelerating, they drop out because they're either having kids or they're managing kids at an age where they need to be more available. The other barrier, of course, and you know, something that we're starting to really talk about is harassment and violence.
Yes, exactly.
Which is a great pullback on women as well. And safe places in the workspace is becoming a big topic, you know, psychological safety. And of course, the last part that I spoke earlier about is the future of work, which is really the whole digitization, automation. Hmm. So I think across all this, if we can work to bring in policy and legislative laws in place that will then allow women to have that amount of, that brings equity. It's a process, right, of bringing equality. So I would see it across all these areas, but we need to prioritize. And I think in Malaysia, unpaid care, harassment, leadership, big issues for us. There are acts, but not yet there. They are still in the making, still being tabled. It's taking us 20 years to get some of these things through. And, you know, it just needs to be expedited, you know.
Do you have anything to add to that, Michelle?
Yeah, I completely agree with Anne. All of those points, completely valid, and especially when we talk about sexual harassment. And we need to be able to address these things because it is happening. That's what's happening on the ground. So we need to recognize that. Again, we need to recognize the differences between, you know, the genders, what impacts a certain gender more than the other. So when you talk about sexual harassment, that is a fact, right? So that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. Again, I think all these factors go towards shifting that mindset, right, about how women are treated and how they should be treated and what they can bring. If the government, you know, helps to address that, that will help shift the needle again in terms of both, you know, in corporates economically as well as, you know, culturally. And I will say this, we are also at ICD, I'm working with the government to try and and create that bridge, right, between the corporate side as well as the policymakers, so that, you know, these conversations, the discourse can be had at that level, so that they you know, government can see the input from the corporate side. And this is, again, with civil society as well involved. So it's a three-pronged kind of approach. And I think this will help get everyone together onto a common platform so that we can have that discourse going.
Hmm. Michelle, Anne, thanks very much for speaking with me today and sharing your insights on this very important topic. I've been speaking to Michelle Kaithi Lim, President and CEO of the Institute of Corporate Directors Malaysia, and Anne Abraham, Chairperson and Founder of Lead Women. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.